I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the rig.
You found it. It's the Japan What Podcast, episode 143. And I am your host, Matthew PMBigelow.com. This is, of course, the podcast focusing on AI trends in Japan, conflict in the Indo-Pacific, odd items and more, and coming at you from the Asagaya Studios in Suginami-ku, Tokyo, Japan. It is I, Matthew, PMBigelow.com. And we are joined today by...
Max von Schuler Kobayashi.
Max von Schuler Kobayashi. Cheers, buddy. We are drinking what the listener, Mr. Listener, or Ms. Listener, is drinking. Whatever they're drinking, we're drinking.
We are drinking. All right.
All right. Today's a bit of a special episode. We don't usually do interviews or conversations and stuff like that. It's me more or less going through those news categories that I like to talk about. What I believe to be are important topics to understand the world, but also what is going to be happening to us as we go on in life. And also not to be too myopic, because when I was an AI researcher and teacher at in the telecommunications industry, you get a little bit myopic in your views, like Ted Kaczynski warned about in the Technological Society Unabomber Manifesto, where it's like... you have a doctor in ABC, and he doesn't know anything about doctor in DEF. And you have a scientist who might be a chemist, but he doesn't know anything about biology. And that's what happened to a lot of us. We were motoring along with our lives, and then suddenly COVID hit us. But if we had been maybe studying about the Wuhan or knew a little bit more about where our supply chains were coming from,
right,
we could have prepared accordingly, but we were caught flat-footed and knocked off our feet. Of course, COVID turned out to be a massive lie, and it was a kerfuffle, some might even say, a real pickle that that we were put through and are still dealing with the trauma of as the after effects of the money printing and the lockdowns and, you know, destroying young people's lives. The water is still sloshing back and forth in the bathtub. And a lot of people have normalized it, where they just kind of walk through their life going, water has always sloshed. What are you talking about? But I don't intend to be caught flat footed again. And today we're going to do more of a focus on conflict and Max von Schuler Kobayashi, who I've known for a long time and consider a good friend.
Thank you.
Me too. Has been publishing lots of books about the collapse of America, but in a way to hopefully educate Japanese people about what's going on with that.
Right.
Because most Japanese people get information from abroad, either from the state broadcaster, NHK, which goes along with whatever the official American narrative wants.
Right, right.
And if they are inclined to read about the news, more often than not, they're going to get their world news digested via AP or Reuters or mainstream news media. And nobody in Japan knows about the culture war that's going on in America right now.
Right, right.
They just think that Donald Trump is a Nazi. No, not even a Nazi. They don't even understand it because nothing makes sense because it's being disseminated by basically the intelligence agencies who are also losing the plot. So we have Max in studio here today to kind of talk us through it. And let's just begin with your book.
Okay.
So
the title
did I get everything? Anything else you want to talk about? Okay, introduce yourself?
That's okay. That's,
all right.
The title is only in Japanese title, but the book is both in English and Japanese. And the title is Naisen de Hokai Suru America.
All right. Oh, wait, I forgot to mention, you were a communist hunter working as a double agent in the Cold War.
That's correct.
In Japan.
I was a naval intelligence agent. I was in the United States Marine Corps in Yamaguchi-ken, Iwakuni Base. And I was scouted by, at that time, it was at the Vietnam War, end of the Vietnam War, American communists in Japan who were journalists and spies. And they thought they were looking for information on our base. And scouted me. And I went to my captain and since the Marine Corps has no political intelligence, we're retired with the Navy, so I became a naval intelligence agent, and I was undercover for 1 year.
So your knowledge about these topics go back quite a ways.
50 years ago.
50 years. You're not a spring chicken, to say the least, but it also means that you're not just somebody who woke up yesterday, typed in 9/11 fake job into a search engine.
So.
And are now suddenly not believing in nuclear weapons and boasting about flat earth theories. You're well grounded in these areas.
I have experience.
Anyways, so what's this book? Give us the Japanese title one more time, please.
Naisende Hokai Suru America. It's in Amazon and it's been bestseller in this category for like 3 months. And it's top, I think I went to top 15 or top 35, something like that.
What number is this book for you? Number 7?
This is number 9.
Number 9, okay.
This is a reissue of a book that I published for 7 years ago.
That's okay.
And it's just not, it's updated. It's updated.
Interesting, because it does need an update, because the narrative is still mostly the same, but it's been expanded upon.
Right.
So what is the narrative and how has it been expanded upon?
Okay. When I wrote it 7 years ago, still the LGBT movement was not as big then as it is now. The transgender movement and so forth, that's really gotten bigger.
The point where 7 years ago, they weren't hanging flags all over.
No.
You know, instead of your national flags.
Not yet.
Japan is creeping in, but it's not there yet. But anyways.
And of course, in 2020, we had the election and BLM and Antifa really took the stage for the left, but I do describe them even 7 years ago. I knew what they were becoming, and I also describe the right wing, the militia movements. In Japanese, we say Minpei Soshiki, because if some country uses militia, it's an official military group. No, in America, it's not. It's private. It's a private army group, and I think the militia is actually responsible for Trump getting elected in 1916. No, 2016.
Whoa.
2016.
Flat Earth. Yeah, 2016, yes.
And America is heading towards this internal civil conflict. And also, what's really increasing is crime. Crime is making the big cities of America uninhabitable.
This is true.
And people are fleeing them. Fleeing to the countryside. And the big cities are facing collapse. And now we've got this influx of migrants, illegal migrants, just anybody can come in, and they're a massive criminal wave. And the Democrats have calculated that these people will support the Democratic Party in elections. They're going to give them a vote right away. That's not going to happen. What they're going to do is make their own third state.
Largely what has happened in Europe as well.
Yeah,
with the influx of Muslim migrants. There was a lot of speculation that they might support the people that let them in. Or no, they're actually very conservative families, so maybe they will support the conservative parties.
Right.
But they're actually forming probably their own parties internally. Europe is a lot of coalition when it comes to governments, right. A lot of parliamentary systems. But it just goes to show that you can bring in a bunch of people, but you can't assume where they're going to end up. Like it's like opening up the dam and saying all the water's going to go that way.
Yeah.
It's not going to work that way.
And of course they're basically South American, Central American, which are Catholic and very conservative.
In America right now. Yes.
And the American left, especially the Biden administration, is very, very supportive of the transgender movement and changing children's sex and all this kind of thing.
And atheists. I believe there's a lot of atheism. And
so forth.
Yeah.
These people are not going to go for that. They're religious, you know, and they're not going to go for that. They're also mostly gangsters.
There's a lot of gang influence coming in. This is a lot of people get called racist or like migrophobic or something like that for calling these things, but when Miami, Florida, opened up its doors to mass migration in the 80s, 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. Places like Cuba just opened up their prisons and said, go.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
What Venezuela has done now.
Venezuela has done it. Well, Haiti is basically an open-air prison. People say Gaza's an open-air prison. Try going to Haiti. But all of these places, yeah, they will just it makes sense for them because they're poor third world countries and now they don't have this burden on their tax system and they can, you know, kind of use it as a way to attack America. The idea that you're just going to have like a woman crossing the Rio Grande into from Mexico into Texas holding a baby and that's representative of like even a minority of the migrants is it's a media op.
I got this one figure and this is from a newscaster who said he got this figure from a sports team owner, but he can't identify, who's from Central America. And the person came to America, got a job as a security guard, and worked his way up and became very rich and so forth. And he asked this person, which he can't identify, how many of these people crossing into America are actually real migrants? And the man said 20%. The rest are gangers, people.
Yeah.
And very violent people. And the El Salvadoran gang is MS-13.
Yeah.
And they start actually in America. And there's another one from Argentina, Trente de Argua. I have probably got the name wrong. And they are joining with the MS-13 and other local people in New York City and so forth, forming criminal alliances. And these people, criminal alliances, especially since America has this law where below $1,000, you cannot be prosecuted for a crime.
In many cities now, yes.
Many cities.
And it's not just per day. It's per crime. So yeah, you could go 10 stores
and rob.
Yeah, so.
And these are professional now. They're professional robbery rings that are going around. And I don't know how people get food in Chicago. Food stores are closing down.
Yeah.
And New York City are closing down.
We're supposed to care about the food deserts until the consequences of their policies come to fruition. What I'd like to ask you, though, Ray. That's my son's name. Ray. I'm scolding my kids in my brain all day, I guess. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to ask you, Max, is given all that information about America, why are you writing it for a Japanese audience?
Because in Japan, we're so close to America. We're so close to America.
How are we close to America?
And people believe America. People want to follow America. They think America's a wonderful place. And I'm telling the reality, no, it's not. We should protect Japan. It's fine to like America, but people want to imitate what America's doing and bring that into Japan. No, we should not do that. We should protect Japan, protect Japanese culture. And it's really sad what's happening to America. Yes, it's sad. And
It's scary as well because... I agree with you that these issues are, you say we're close to being in Japan, we're close to America, not geographically, but politically, militarily,
right.
Economically, all of these things. There's been it's a very interesting relationship, and I think mm-hmm. it's overall quite successful given the end of World War II and the nuclear bombs and all that.
Right.
Yeah, the overall people in Japan are not really so keyed into these trends that are going on in America to the extent that they are. And then we have more and more American influence trying to draw Japan closer and closer into America right now. So
right.
If you're trying to draw an ally more and more into yourself, but if the people that you're drawing into yourself aren't aware of what you are, there's a big discrepancy in that approach,
right?
Being that by the time that the deal is signed and you're more and more integrated, what are you going to do? Like, for example, this is just as an idea to kind of keep us, I don't mind doing like the talking about America and all that, but this is military U.S. This is from the news from today,
uh-huh.
U.S. military command in Japan to be revamped report.
Uh-huh.
This comes to us from Reuters, and it says U.S. President Joe Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida will unveil a plan next month to restructure the U.S. military command in Japan in the face of shared concerns about China, the Financial Times reported on Sunday. Now, the Financial Times is totally a spook operation, and they're basically policy wonks trying to promote the ideal vision of the future of the Americas through the media so that it appears like it's not a subterfuge. It's not a feint. It's like, oh, look at this news article. We're revising the U.S. but Japan relationship militarily. But what if the America is just trying to push Japan and the Philippines into the way of China's expansion so that America doesn't get the ramifications of those actions?
Right. We're going to take it in Philippines and Japan. We're going to be hit.
Right.
And the Philippines is military very weak.
Yeah.
It's very weak. I'm not sure. I have to check again, but about a year ago I checked, and the Philippines doesn't even have jet aircraft. They don't have jet fighter aircraft.
Right.
And the Navy is very old.
There's a lot of rickety ships that they're putting in the ways of these Chinese Coast Guards ships that are very modern, very seaworthy, yes. And their sea cannons or water cannons are basically weapons.
Yes.
They destroy Filipino ships with some regularity now. So if you're not aware that, like, you have to have a certain amount of diversity, equity, and inclusion in your military top brass in America right now, and that there's an oddly high percentage of minoritism going on in the high ranks of the U.S. administration
right now. In the United States
If we're being pulled into that,
yeah.
Then you can be anybody and still be number one. But if you're forcing the levers on things from like a HR perspective, which mm-hmm. a lot of this DEI comes from, then you're not going to get the best people in the best positions.
The military is in serious trouble in America.
Yeah.
And many people are quitting. And recently, October 7th last year, the Israel-Hamas war started up again. And America sent two carriers, the Eisenhower and the Ford.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ford was very undermanned. It was rated for 2,600 people. There are only 2,000 people on the ship.
That's a severe shortage.
Which what that means is the ship cannot function in a wartime area. They could barely maneuver the ship.
It's a show of force.
It's a show, but they can't fight.
Yeah. And then what Russia did is that they equipped their aircraft fighters with nuclear missiles and had them fly over the Crimea Ocean, the Black Ocean.
The Black Sea.
Within range of those carriers
and they were pulled back.
Yeah, really quickly. They're nowhere near there anymore.
And America now is just bluffing. I was born in America. And, Americans know that America's in trouble. America's collapsing. Many Americans know America's in trouble. They won't say collapsing. But they want to show they're strong somewhere. And Ukraine has totally failed.
Yes.
Totally failed. And, okay, a few days ago there was a major terror attack in Moscow. That doesn't mean anything as far as the war goes. It doesn't help the war effort at all for Ukraine.
No. Well, and do you believe it was done by the ISIS affiliate? ISIS?
No.
It's obviously Victoria Nuland, who was a deputy secretary. I can't remember what her title
deputy
was.
Deputy secretary. She was number three, acting as number two.
Yeah. She steps down, you know, and says, Russia's going to get it. And then all of a sudden, Russia gets it in a very nasty way.
Which is just a nasty thing.
And by the way, if you believe that the ISIS people attacked Moscow, go look at the videos and try to find anybody going, "Oh, no, Akbar! I don't want more!" Which is
interesting point. Also,
and you don't see that. But also, when you see a lot of ISIS attacks, they randomly fire their AKs in the air all the time. And they run around really frenetically. But these people were just going like person to person and pecking them off. And I did see one video where one person says, "I don't have more," but that's like, okay, they're from Tajikistan. They might just be saying that, but it had none of the suicide bombers.
They surrendered.
There's no suicide bombers. There's
and
no explosions.
They
left early. They didn't stay a long time.
They left for the Ukrainian border and the Ukrainians opened a window for them to come in, open an area.
That's what we're being told. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have anything about Ukraine? Yeah, Ukrainian missiles hit two Russian ships at Crimean port in Sevastopol.
That I have to be careful with because they say that a lot.
Yeah.
And what ships? And did they do any serious damage?
Well,
and
the Russian Navy is not really a formidable.
It is.
Is it?
It is. Now? And the Ukrainians have not hit very serious ships. Very few. And the Russian Navy is much more powerful than the United States Navy now. They're not a global force, but they can seriously interfere.
Hmm.
And they can seriously interfere what the Americans do. And they're a much more capable force than the United States Navy. The United States Navy is very concentrated on DEI and LGBT and all this kind of stuff. And they're losing people. They're losing very qualified people.
So what this means for Japan is that when we have these escalations take place, and Japan right now is very, in my opinion, very foolishly trying to play both sides. Mm-hmm. Japan has these ties with Russian infrastructure for the Sakhalin gas project.
Right, right, right.
And, but at the same time, Japan wants to keep those interests, but at the same time, rebuild Ukraine or support America's interests in
Ukraine.
Money
is, that money would be gone. That's not a black hole. And because Russia's,
but do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
so,
yes, yes.
So we look at these events in Moscow, and well, how does that tie into Japan? Well, Japan does share maritime borders with Russia on its far east coast, right. And that can be used as a distraction if China goes into Taiwan or the Philippines. They could just release some ships up by Hokkaido, have North Korea fire off some ballistic missiles, and all of a sudden you have South Korea and the Japanese maritime forces unable to support in full China aggression in the Southeast Asian Sea.
Right?
That would be a very practical Navy tactic to do so if you're fighting as a coalition. But in addition, this comes to us from March 23rd. We're recording this on March
25th.
And this is from Reuters as well. And I'm just kind of giving some, trying to tie it back into Japan because we're getting tied up in this. We're getting sucked in the military revamp with America. Mm-hmm. Okay, Russia, Japan stands with Ukraine, apparently so. And the Japanese people are constantly fed propaganda about how great Ukraine is now. And before Russia moved into Ukraine, the Azov Battalion was considered to be a
Nazi organization.
It is. But after they moved in, the Japanese government said, oh, we're sorry. We didn't mean to categorize you guys as such. And a month after that changed, suddenly you had members of the Azov Battalion on NHK News or on Japanese programs or BS television. Mm-hmm. So interesting how all this works. But in addition, Russia warns Japan of serious consequences if Patriot missiles made in Japan end up in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So as Japan ratifies its constitution to export more arms and do all of that, well, if it's making Patriot missiles in Japan, those end up being used by Ukrainian forces. Well, what's Putin going to do then? Japan's trying to play this both ways. Does this make sense politically? Like, is Japan being really pushed around here, or what's going on?
Japan is being pushed around. The Russians know this, though. The Russians know this, and I think the Russians are taking a long-term view of the whole thing. They understand that Japan is an American puppet. This can't last, because America cannot last. America itself cannot last.
Just wait it out.
And I would really put that this year, a real serious American internal problem. And I've seen, like, the Victoria Nuland resignation. This is a big sign that among the neocons, they understand now that supporting Ukraine is useless. It's not going to get anything, and it's not going to win, and Ukraine is totally defeated, which is true. So let's do something in Asia. And there's people that... My hope is that... this is a bad hope, though. that America gets internal problems that distract them so much they won't be able to do too much mischief in Asia. I will say this, though. If China invaded Taiwan, Japan can stop it alone. We have the Soryu-class submarine, which is very, very superior. And
are these the ones that run the lithium-ion batteries?
Yes. And the torpedoes they have are excellent. One torpedo sinks one ship. Now, how do they do that? The torpedo does not hit the ship. It goes under the ship and explodes underneath the keel in the center, which even a large ship will break it apart. And a keel, for people who don't know, K-E-E-L, keel, it's like a backbone. It's like a backbone. So if you break that keel, you've broken the ship. And
or like thrusting a rapier into a knight's back.
Yeah. And, okay, if we sent
ten
Soryu-class submarines, I'm guessing we would lose about two. but they're very, very good. They're the best in the world, frankly speaking. I had a Jiaitai person ask me the other day.
Jiaitai is the self-defense force.
Yes, Japanese. Yeah. Should we give the Americans the Soryu class, build them for America? Well, can America afford it? One. And American submarine program is really on the ropes now. Do they have the personnel to run them? They have the personnel to run them. We have Australia as an ally of Japan. They have six submarines, but they can only crew four. They don't have enough people to run six.
Yeah.
So
if you're China, would you attack?
No.
Or would you just wait 10 years?
Wait 10 years and blockade. What if they blockaded, made some kind of thing? What was it? Nancy Pelosi, when she was still Gicho.
The previous U.S. Secretary of...
She was the...
Speaker of the
Speaker
House.
Of the House.
Okay, American politics.
Right. And she visited Taiwan. So then all of a sudden, China did all these exercises in six areas around Taiwan. And what they showed is they can blockade. I think what they will do, I don't think they'll really invade. They'll threaten to invade, but actually blockade. And if it's not a attacking blockade, do we attack their ships and start a war? This is the question. But what if they start stopping merchant ships?
China has a whole bunch of merchant ships that they use as a navy militia as well. They're wolves in sheep's clothing.
Right, on fishing boats and so forth. They actually have weapons.
Just 300 fishing boats. What's your problem? We're just fishing here.
Yes. And that's a more Chinese tactic. The Chinese military, in my opinion, is not 100% that good. The last war they had was 1979. And that was with Vietnam. And they got really, really punished bad.
Everybody gets punished bad by Vietnam.
Yes. I was
Vietnam and Afghanistan. If you go there, you're getting punished.
You're getting punished, yes. So my philosophy...
But Vietnamese girls are way prettier than the Afghani girls.
Don't try for girls in Afghanistan. It's boys. They do. But in any case, that's getting a low-level joke. But... I think Japan should make military alliances with Vietnam and Russia. America is no longer capable, militarily speaking.
Do you think that, okay, so you've mentioned to me, and we've talked about this before, and it was kind of, I thought there would be more information coming from you about this, but there wasn't. There simply wasn't. And I said, this is how I'm going to frame it. Right now, if you want to talk to kind of the... non-war hockey conservative movement in the West, in Canada and in America, they are going to know about the subcultures in America and why they're very dangerous or why you should support them. They would have you might not agree with it, but they would have in-depth answers to it.
Right.
And I asked you about the Japanese conservative movement. Do they know about any of this? And you said no. And is that still the same answer?
It's still the same. I've done some education work in my various speeches and so forth. But for a lot of people, they just don't know. And I was in, frankly, last week I was in Osaka, gave a speech. And I talked about the transgender movement with the Drag Queen Story Hour. What they're doing is pushing kids into converting their sex. And that this is also exists in Japan, this group. They were shocked. They just had no idea this kind of stuff is going on.
Do you put that in the book?
Yes, it's in the book. It's in the book about transgenderism and how schools and psychiatrists and the medical profession in the United States pushes this on children. And you're talking children who believe in Santa Claus. And what sex? They don't know. They're just kids. You know, I mean, you can...
Okay, well, this is just to back it up. Drag Queen Story Hour, Tokyo, was launched in November 2018 as the first and only official local chapter in Japan, run by drag queens and other experts who are specialized in childhood education, LGBTQ, NPO management, and others. And that comes to us from Arts Council Tokyo JP.
Now, specialized in child education, that's very scary.
They also have a Twitter page or an X page. Yeah, what's new from Drag Queen Story Hour? Yeah. And of course, they're quoting from the UN. Drag Queen Story Hour. Madame Bonjour John Jay is teaching children that it's okay to be different during storytelling sessions in their native Tokyo at UN News Center. So the UN is definitely backing up these movements.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's not just like some fringe group in, you know, Shinjuku ni Chome, mm-hmm. who like that's the kind of the gay party town district. And I walk there all the time because it's near my house.
Uh-huh.
You can have some good times there. Absolutely. But it's not necessarily a child education center. unless you're, whoa.
My knowledge of the Japanese gay movement is I've had some friends, political friends in Suginami, where I live, and they've gone to the gay people and talked, and they've asked around there. The gay people want to be left alone.
Yeah.
They don't want to be involved in politics and in changing Japanese society. And
that's why gay people aren't focused on anymore.
Right.
It's the lesbians who are very politically active. And they're the ones that changed it from the gay and lesbian society to the lesbian and gay society way back in the day. I interviewed a drag queen about that like 10 years ago who's gay. And he said like, yeah. All the lesbians got together and said, we're going to change the name. And no gay guys turned up to, like, oppose it. So it just became the name.
Uh-huh.
Because the gay guys were not political.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So people in Japan are becoming more and more increasingly aware of things. And also what's really helping me in my work is President Biden. He's just out of it. And it's so bad that it can't be kept out of the news.
No.
And as
more and more people look at X or Twitter or short video feeds of him stumbling and bumbling around, you only need like 5 seconds to ascertain that his brain is mush. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And therefore, why is he there?
Why is he there?
Yeah.
Right. And the United States Democrats, they can't realize that they're really screwed up. One thing, you know, I've always criticized America in my life. I've lived in Japan 50 years.
It's longer than I've been alive. I'm 43.
You're a young kid. And all parts still work, right?
As far as I know.
Any case. So I've been saying this since I was a kid. And I knew that America had problems, and the problems became greater and greater, and people didn't address those problems. The American right. And I think the American right in the 2020 election really misunderstood the left, how far they would go to destroy America. And now they're kind of coming back. They're coming back. I see that with the...
I see it too. I see a lot more people openly criticizing DEI. And the thing is that like, if you're someone like me who... I'm not a conservative. I'm not a right-wing person. But if you ask almost any left-wing person questions to me, they would probably think I'm a virulent Nazi just because I am not like I don't want to have such rigid controls on society and telling people who can do what and say what and go where and all of these things. It's making a lot of people who are tired of it not willing to go along with it anymore. But the thing is that who's in control here? Biden's in control. Kishida's in control. There are plenty of capable Americans and Japanese people who could make the best, not best, but make policies that would just not ruin everything all the time.
Right.
And have some sort of stewardship and some sort of realistic goals. But we have this schizophrenic society, basically a breakaway group of schizophrenics who believe in their own bathwater farts that cannot view anything outside of the way that they view it. Because if you do so, therefore you are a Trump supporter. A Trump supporter is basically saying gas the Jews according to their way of thinking. So if you're like, I'm not sure if we should have genital mutilation of children going on at the school, then people will say, you sound like a Trump supporter. And in the past 10 years, that would make a lot of people just shut up and go along with it. But you're going to live with those consequences. So more and more people are not willing to go along with those consequences. But those people are still not at the helms of control. Like those DEI people in those 10 years have been hiring DEI people and DEI people and DEI people. So you have this giant buffer zone of DEI people who can basically just enact policy. And so you have your opinions about them. But oops, we have policy according to us. We can arrest you now. And so that's also happening as well.
I think that's a law now in Canada, isn't it? That if you criticize someone, you can be arrested.
Yeah, there's thought crimes in Canada now. And they've also implemented the medical assistance in dying program, which is legal euthanasia. And people that can't get their medications are told by their doctors to apply for the program. And one person was looking for to treat her depression. She said, I'm depressed and I'm not sure what to do. The person who she was seeing suggested medical assistance in dying. And now it's like one of the top 10 causes of death in Canada, where about 13,000 people so far have gone through with this program. And there's commercials. I'm not going to be a burden. I'm going to end my life the way I want to. It's like your choice. And it's being promoted as such. And so it's one of those things where you didn't realize that's how far things were going to go, but you weren't speaking up about it before, so why would it stop? Yeah. And you're not sure where things are going to go. Like I said, one of the reasons why we can talk about like what's happening in Moscow, what's happening in Ukraine, well, is those things expand. They expand in ways you can't predict. And if we're in Japan and we're going to be a part of that by supporting one side or the other quite openly all the time, well, as things expand and expand and expand, if you just go along with it, you're going to end up going along with it in ways you never imagined you would have to. So you have to like speak up. You have to project where things are going and parse the data and decide what type of future you envision for yourself, or other people are going to envision it for you. The entire COVID thing was other people envisioning your future for you. And if you didn't go along with it, you were killing somebody's grandma. So everybody should shut up. But what happened as a result of that? Just massive amounts of education down the drain for an entire generation of kids.
Yeah.
Weird shots and so on and so forth. And also like a giant bifurcation of society. Like I didn't get a shot. And I was told that I was basically like a Trump supporter. I was a Nazi. I was an unclean person. It's like a caste society from India. But you have to stand up and say no from the beginning. Otherwise, you're going to be wearing a mask for 5 years and getting 7 or 8 booster shots or something like that. I didn't want that future for myself or my family. So I stood up at the beginning.
Right. And most of my friends are that way, no shots and so forth. And I know people who've had the shots. I know actually a Japanese politician had 2 shots and he lost all his hair. He got sick and that converted him.
Real fast.
Okay, well, that's a whole other thing, the corona thing.
Yeah, but just as an example, we're always, if you're... with the whole LGBTQ thing, with the whole corona thing, you're basically dealing with media operations telling you to go along with something. And then if you don't, you're Hitler over and over and over again.
But I'm a German. I'm a von Schuller, so I have to be careful of all that. Yes.
Well, that's what I mean, though. But we're not. That's the thing.
We're not. No.
Yeah, at all. But so the idea that you're just going to shame people essentially into going along with these insane programs is leading to these problems that we're talking about today.
Right.
And by going along with it, you are basically condemning your future or even your children's future to go along into that society.
Well,
because you're not visionary. You're not being a visionary.
The left has totally the vision that the left has created is a
suicide cult.
It's a suicide cult, and it's totally destroyed the West. And that's what I'm trying to communicate to Japanese people.
They destroyed my left movement. I used to be a left winger. Let's think about communities. Let's think about small banks. Let's think about organic farming. Let's think about not discriminating people based on the color of their skin.
Right.
Let's just hire based on their abilities and what they want to do and give people a chance. That's right wing now. They destroyed my left wing.
I
hate them for that.
Was a member of Democrats Abroad in Japan. I used to be and voted for Obama and actually campaigned in Japan for that. But what did it for me was this transgender thing. And converting kids. Leave the kids alone. Kids, you know, and I have gay friends who told me about, they knew when they were 3 that they were gay. Okay. And gay is natural. There's always been certain percent of people in any society.
Yeah. Yeah. People that lose all their hair fighting the gays. I don't get it.
Yeah. And when I was in the military, though, as an intelligence agent, It wasn't my job, but I did help sometimes. But my boss was a gay hunter. At that time, gay people could not serve in the United States military. And what would happen is you would get basically a general discharge if you were discovered to be gay. And, okay, I can't really go any farther.
Was that general discharge on their face?
No, there's various categories for discharge. The best, of course, is honorable, which I got.
Yeah, that's honorable, just when you keep it in your pants.
Then medical, then general, then bad conduct, and then dishonorable.
Yeah.
But bad conduct and dishonorable, you have to actually quit, do some kind of crime, really. General kind of means that for some reason you didn't fit the requirements of the military. And they would give gay people a general discharge at that time. Of course, during the Vietnam War, during the draft, I think some people tried to say, I'm gay. And no, you're not. You're going to the Army. Yeah, you're going to Vietnam.
Yeah, it's a catch-22 type of thing.
Right. But what's happened now in America? America has become so different and so hostile to each other. And it's really the left more than the right. When I was a kid in high school, it was in Vietnam War. And I joined the Marine Corps in 1974 and came to Japan in 1974. Well, I was actually joining the Marine Corps in 1973. I was signed up. But I graduated high school in 1974. So, okay. There was a phrase during the Vietnam War. I don't believe in what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it.
Yeah, that was common. That was like that's an American trope from before 2008.
And I thought, oh, that's silly. Of course. I mean, of course, we're America. It's America. Yeah. It's the First Amendment.
What, water's wet? Jeez.
Yeah. But what happened is that's now become, I will fight to make sure you cannot say anything. Cancel culture.
Yeah. I'm gonna. Basically, the gay hunters from your military are now, they've come back to haunt us all.
And this thing like J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter, she's at least one book has been not published because people demonstrate against it. Why? Simply because she says a woman is a woman. Now, she's a radical leftist. She's very left-wing.
But she's very left-wing.
Very feminist. But she said that unless you're born with a uterus, you're not a woman. And, yeah. Okay, and I have people I know in Japan. I would consider them friends, you know, but... and they're foreigners. One is a foreigner and goes around as transgender. Well, all right. He wants to do that. And I say he. I say he. He would probably, you should say she. Excuse me, he. He's a guy, dressed as a girl. And, all right, that's his choice. I years ago, once I used to try and get him a job. He's a German, native German. I'm an ethnic German. My German is not native at all. And there was a job which would involve the translation of German. I says, look, I'm not up to it. You should get this person. And the agency said, no, too weird. Well, okay, what can I say beyond that? And I have to say, well,
that's
yes,
their discriminatory
person,
policy. They have to get behind that.
Weird, yeah. But, you know.
Jeez. Speaks could you Japanese? Imagine? I couldn't imagine that. So let's just say that that person who wears a dress and is totally an amazing German to English to Japanese translator is right in the room. And that document comes and I'm like, I disagree with your politics. Therefore, you can't do this job. Like, what? It doesn't enter my mind that would be an appropriate way to conduct myself. I'd be like, listen, I think you're a son of a bitch, but this is the job for you. You know? Whatever. And, it wouldn't even, yeah.
And
I wouldn't even say you're a son of a bitch. I would say, oh, look, this is your expertise. Lucky day, you know? Whatever.
And it's become such a weird world. And this makes American society non-functional. It gradually slides into non-function.
And it's not like it's every day. What I'd like to say is there's a lot of adverse reactions to the COVID vaccine. But it's not like it's so adverse there's people falling down on the floor everywhere you go around the world.
Right.
But it's enough to kind of destabilize things in a certain way.
Yes.
Or... the reaction to COVID, we could even say, not even the vaccines. So shutting down the economy, doing all of that. Now we have this massive tick in cancer rates because people, okay, was it the vaccine? I don't know. But were people going to the hospital to get their cancer treated? No, they weren't. Were people going for pre-screenings? No, they weren't. So now all of a sudden you have this like, okay, talking about turbo cancers because of the reaction to COVID. So it's the same idea where you didn't You went along with it, and then it comes back and it bites you in the ass.
Yes, yes. And we're too far. The United States is too far to recover and return to normal America.
So it's not like it's 100% every day, everywhere you look, all the time. But there's enough of it that's going on in society right. where it starts steering the ship in a certain direction.
And in America, what's happened now and politically and so forth, the migrant problem, Texas has almost created a separate country. Texas almost created a separate country. And 27 states went along with them and their efforts to slow down. They're not trying to stop the migrants. They're just saying, don't cross the border anywhere you want. Go through the checkpoint. Go to the checkpoint. They're not saying don't come into America.
Yeah. Now we want to hire 2,000 more border agents for processing. That's the policy right now.
But
we need to get these people in here in a regulated manner. So therefore, we need to beef up our processing. It's like, well, that's not stopping things. You're just making a line. You're like saying line up here.
A lot of Japanese people are asking me, well, will Trump save America if Trump is selected in this November? No. And no, he can't. I say this, and what the Trump presidency was, it was not salvation of America. It was a break, an American collapse, a break. And America is headed towards collapse. In Japan, we have to prepare for that. I have something shocking for you, talking about conflict. It is my estimation that Japan, the Japanese military, should prepare for the defense of Hawaii from China. Because America will not be able to defend Hawaii much longer. The American military is totally incapable. And the Chinese might just seize it. So here's my plan. We have problems with immigrants in Japan. And also, I also say that in the future of Japan, we should look to Russia and to Vietnam, especially as to contain our China problem. Because if China has to look south and look north both ways, they have a problem confronting Japan. Okay. If we just deport all these Vietnamese workers in Japan, which have been abandoned, basically, they're forming criminal gangs in Tochigi and Guma.
Yeah, I've covered this a lot on the podcast. Right. And it's nothing to say anything bad about the Vietnamese, but they 500,000 of them are about came over, and then COVID happened, and a lot of them were abandoned.
Abandoned.
What are they supposed to do? They conglomerate in large cities. They get jobs that they're not supposed to be having. Because they're supposed to be technical interns or something like that, or right. learning trade skills and stuff like that. But instead, they're just scanning things in a convenience store, not making enough money to get by. So,
okay, let's do this.
So
let's draft them in the Japanese army.
But okay,
let's draft them in the Japanese army and garrison Hawaii.
Garrison Hawaii,
and then put them back in Vietnam, buy them a house or buy them a business, and Japanese government sets this. This is my plan for how to deal with these people.
I like this plan, but this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where we have great ideas of policy that exist outside of the power structure. Because as we're talking about this idea, the Kishida administration is talking with the International Organization of Migrants or Migration, a UN thing, to give them a bunch of money, and then all of a sudden the Japanese government, the top of the top, decides to, in addition to the 500,000 people that they just recently brought over, to bring over an additional 860,000 workers over the next 5-10 years.
Don't you know that Kishida-san's brother runs a business importing immigrants?
That's not surprising. It sounds like a Trudeau type of thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like we are going to be dealing with more and more of these problems or this influence in Japan than not.
So right.
Even though we have these ideas, and it's certainly entertaining to say, you know, hey, 500,000 Vietnamese, go take Hawaii. We'll take away the 15-minute city that was, you know, scheduled to be built up in that town that was burnt down by the space lasers or whatever.
right, you
can have some waterfront property if you take it, you know, some incentives. That would charge up some Vietnamese, I'm sure. We can say these things, but while we're talking about it, it's like, oh, no, we're just going to bring in another 860,000 because...
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's the same idea with when you hear about a lot of pro-migration policy politicians in America. They could be Republicans or Democrats, or it doesn't really matter. They will say, well, these are 9 million jobs that just Americans don't need or want. And that's what the Kishida government is saying as well. We have not enough people to fill these jobs, and these are jobs that Japanese people don't want. Therefore, we need But you know what China is doing? Automation. They are the robot revolution that was supposed to happen in Japan is happening in China right now. They have factories upon factories upon factories. You see these reports of hundreds of thousands of young Chinese men out of work. That's because the factories are all automated now. And the factories themselves operate their own online marketplaces where people on their smartphones order what they want from these factories. And then the robots prepare the orders and ship them out to them. So there's this whole economy going on in China right now where you don't need people to work. So they've figured out the robot revolution in China. They've done it because they are a producer of stuff. Japan is a producer of niche markets or niche goods. Right. There are things that Japan could do on a large scale, like shipbuilding, but you can't have a 3D printer making giant ships for the liners and things like that. That requires quite a bit of know-how. But as far as China is concerned, they've solved a lot of these issues with automation. Yeah, they've gone all in, all in. Yeah, I had some videos I was going to show you. We can maybe do it another time. But yeah, the automation in China right now is off the chain. Yep.
Wow.
So you're getting more gigs speaking about stuff.
Yes.
And is this having an effect? What's going on? Are people, we're talking about how there's lots of people on the outside who are aware, but the inside is unaware. They're living in I believe it's a schizophrenic breakaway society. That's how I view it now. Are you having any effect in those regards?
People are quoting me. Frankly speaking, I got, I didn't have a chance to watch it, but someone sent me a video in Japanese today about Civil War in America and said, they mentioned you, me. I mentioned in it. And people are noticing what I do. And my book is being read. Yes. Now, what's going to happen? I think what's going to happen in Japan is I'm not going to be hired, probably. I don't know. Japanese are different than Americans. They don't have the same hate, for example, than America does. And Japanese people will actually communicate across the barriers between right and left. There's some of that. Which in America, there just isn't anymore.
Not anymore. It's crazy.
And what should we do? And I'm telling people things like, very radical things like, well, call up your representative, your Diet member. Call him up. Call his office, you know. And, of course, you're not going to get him. You're going to get his secretary or send him a letter saying, I don't like what you're doing. And the next election, I will organize a group against you. This is America. Yeah, this is democracy. This is your total right. And very radical.
And you have a First Amendment in Japan. You have complete freedom. It's one of the few places on earth that is that free to talk about stuff.
And I've told my publisher, and I said, look, if we were in America, they have their office. There would be people outside this office saying, get rid of Max, get rid of Max. You know, and not in Japan. No. And people are realizing the United States is weird. Things are getting weird. It's starting to realize. Also, there's a lot of Japanese people in America who send back by Facebook or Twitter, whatever, X now.
I never thought about that. The Japanese diaspora in America.
There's a lot of Japanese people.
Yes, in key areas. California and Missouri, I believe, has a big one of them.
Right.
Where a lot of the Japanese, what is that contingent of the infantry, the 441?
442.
442, yeah.
442, United States Army. At that time, the United States Army was segregated by race.
Yeah.
For example, the 92nd Infantry Division in Italy was all black. And mostly in France, they were mostly black units were transport and so forth like that. But units were racially organized. And not until just before the Korean War did that change.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But anyways... getting the Japanese diaspora to communicate back to Japan, just like the way the Chinese diaspora communicates back to
China
with their WeChat and all of that. That's actually probably the best way to do it.
That's and they're saying things like my books are popular in America in the Japanese diaspora.
Good.
And they're saying things like, Max is right. And that's gotten me more fans. And gradually, I'm not have a, on YouTube, I think I'm on 23,600 something.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm serious. For white people in Japan talking about politics from a Japanese perspective, that's a very empty beach, man. Trust me, I know. If we're talking about anime right now, we would be like billionaires, but it wouldn't even, we'd just like show a book and people would subscribe. But talking about this stuff, it's like, you know.
I have some YouTube friends who've helped me out by, I appear with them and then I get a lot of a boost, but I'm getting a boost and so forth. And so, as you say, white people, white Americans talking about politics in Japan, I'm probably the top guy.
I'd say so now. You've been at it. Like you said, this is your ninth book. It's a rewrite. Where can other people find your stuff?
Okay. Just go to my YouTube. And my YouTube is in Japanese. It's Gunji Rekshiga Max Wakaru.
It'll be linked up in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the best place. And in the Gaio. I don't know how to say that in English. But anyway, there's the information. There's links to my books and so forth. And my blog, frankly, I've ignored the blog for a long, long time.
Yeah, because I used to read your blog regularly, but yeah.
My YouTube is taking up more time.
I would say YouTube is probably a better way to get this information out than a
blog.
Right,
than a blog, right.
What other books have you recently written, and what other topics do they cover?
Okay, another one that's came out is Kakushite Okitai Rekishi. And that's about, half it's about America culture itself, Americans themselves explaining that. And it's half about the Japanese annexation of Korea. It's a book I wrote first about 9 years ago almost, and it's a bestseller. Boom, went over. And, okay, I have, I'm supposed to read this. There's another book coming out now in America, The Japanese Holocaust, and how Japan was so terrible in World War II. And people want me to explain to Americans. And I said, just yesterday I was saying in a speech, I said, no, that's not possible. Americans don't want to hear that. Americans want to hear about World War II, that they were wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. No, Americans, this is what they need to know. We were attacked on December 7th. We kicked a bunch of Japanese ass by nuking their Jap asses. And then went over and kicked out Hitler and fucked him in the ass. America number one, foam finger. Woo, woo, woo.
Except that both are wrong.
No.
American Britain landed in France in Normandy in 1944. It could have never happened without Russia. 70 to 80% of the German army was in Russia.
Yeah, it's like what, on the 23 million on the German side and 27 million on the Russian side in terms of casualties during World War II. Right. Like that's, and don't even forget, like North Africa as well. Yeah, there's a lot of fronts going on though. I wish I knew more about the North Africa stuff, to be honest. That sounds like a really interesting part of the war. Mm-hmm. I don't know nothing
and
about
actually, there was a period in 1943 after Stalingrad when Erich von Manstein, German general, counterattacked and really smashed up the Soviet army, that there was a negotiation for peace between Russia and Germany. You don't know that, right?
No.
And on the Russian side, it was Molotov, who was the foreign secretary. On the German side, it was Heinrich Himmler, chief of the SS, who's a failed chicken farmer. And
how do you fail that?
How do you fail that? He did it. And anyway, the Germans kept saying that they would freeze the line as its present place. And the Russians kept saying, no, you retreat back to your pre-war borders and we'll stop there. If that had somehow been agreed, or a compromise line reached, America never would have aided France. Never. Yeah. But after that, Kursk happened, and the German army was really smashed up, and then it was obvious that Russia could destroy Germany. So, anyway. And Japan was just not as evil as Americans say. Yes, Nanking happened. And I don't deny Nanking. I'm not one of those. And I get pressure on the Japanese right. No, Nanking never happened. I said, actually, it did.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe you weren't the angels you thought you were.
Well, okay, it was a battlefield situation.
Yeah, people go nuts. Look at the COVID era. Look at the Great Leap Forward. People go crazy.
I had an experience in the Marine Corps. I was never in Vietnam. I just missed it. And I was seeing a bar here in Japan, and we had 7,000 Marines in Iwakuni. And I was sitting in this bar, and there's some marine I didn't know sitting there and drinking a beer. And he suddenly starts bawling, crying. And I'm like, hey, whoa, what's going on? What's the matter?
The beer's not that bad.
He said, I was in Vietnam, and I killed 30 kids. Oh, what do you say to that?
Yeah, and I, said, I know. So, I had a guy, a guy I met once, a Canadian, who was in Afghanistan, a sniper.
Yeah.
He's like, splashed out five dudes. I'm like, okay.
He was saying he was walking in patrol in the village outside his base, and his best friend, well, a Vietnamese kid came up with a flower basket. It was a bomb.
Yeah.
And blown to pieces, both the kid and the friend. And he said, anytime a Vietnamese kid came near me after, I just shot him dead. And I know they didn't have a bomb, I know, but it was just my reaction. And I just thought, holy colody. I just missed being in that position.
Thank God.
The fact that I was just a few years younger.
Yeah, that's the luck of the draw.
Luck of the draw.
And speaking of luck of the draw, we're out of luck for today because the studio time is coming to a close, unfortunately.
And yes.
So where can people find your books or where can people locate you, Max?
YouTube. Gunji Rekshi ga Max Wakaru.
And what does Gunji Rekshi mean?
Gunji Rekshi means military history. Military history. De Max Wakaru means Max, I know it.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way to translate it. Yes. Max Wakaru, yeah. Max knows is how I was translating it in my head. Max, I know. Wakaru, yo. Of course, people can find the podcast at all the podcasting platforms. Not going to promote this episode. Don't feel like it. Just went through a whole rigmarole here. You wouldn't even know it.
Wow, it was interesting to watch.
But we were pulling through at the end of the day. But what I'd like to end up is saying is like all these ideas that we're having today, that plenty of good ideas exist outside the system, but the system right now, I believe the upper echelons are like, I called it a few times, but a schizophrenic breakaway society.
Right, right.
And they're not in tune with what reality is or what reality and means. And
reality snaps back. If you study history, you know this. And I'm cautiously optimistic, especially for Japan, that America is going to face serious internal problems and there won't be enough time to foment a serious effort to start a war with China over Taiwan.
And the influence, I'm wondering, from the American system right now. And if we look at, for example, music culture from the 80s and 90s and 2000s,
right, right.
Massive in Japan. Like the top hits were 20-30% from abroad, America, Europe, Canada, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, almost nothing. But the influence coming from the American culture or North American culture or Western culture right now has a lot to do with this LGBTQ, this rights stuff, activism.
Uh-huh.
It's not proliferating in Japan organically, but it is being pushed from the top down. So we have to be aware of those things.
It will fail. And what I'm pushing Japanese to do is we should think about what kind of society we should rebuild in the future. And I'm saying, look to Japanese past. The Edo era was one of the greatest periods in any country's history. It was 263 years of a military government that did not wage war. Think of that. What a thing. Nah? And it was one of the greatest periods of Japanese history as far as culture and so forth. Kabuki was grown up to be a great thing. And Shunga toka nanka ne, Shunga, well, that's the erotic art. That's ukiyo-e, people normally say, I say Shunga. Why do I say Shunga? Let's not go into that.
Yes. we're not talking about the history of porn.
Right. Which Japanese porn is quite interesting. But let's stop.
Yeah,
there.
We'll stop.
But
there.
Japan had a huge cultural revolution. And really, you know, the LGBT and all the
gay
stuff.
We're going through a cultural revolution right now. And unless you at least begin to tell other people that you're not in on it or that you don't want it or that you think that these ideas are not good, you're going to live with these consequences. It's like people who say, I believe in drug legalization because I don't think some person who does drugs should go to jail. Okay. But then you have a bunch of druggies show up in your neighborhood.
And they rob everything and they take the streets.
What happens is they sell drugs to your kids.
Yes.
And so those are the consequences of your actions. Now, I'm a person who also believes that meth heads should maybe not spend their entire lives in jail.
I have experience in this area.
But the idea...
As an intelligence agent, I was asked to become a drug agent by the Japanese police, and I refused. I messed it up. I just did not want to bust some guy for doing that.
Exactly. You know? But the consequences of those actions kind of mean, like, I'm this open person, but my kids suffer the consequences of those actions.
Yes.
So we're kind of looking at a lot of these things right now where we want to be tolerant, we want to be open, but we also have to say minoritism is not the end all and be all, and it should not be occupying our entire lives here. There's important mechanisms to run. We have nuclear power plants. We have advanced economies. Let's focus on those things.
Yes.
And when we do focus on those things, if we can, quote unquote, build a wall around our economies, it allows the freaks to live peacefully within those walls. And yes. I like living in prosperous societies that allow for freaks to do their freak things.
Hey,
it makes it really fun and interesting.
Yes.
But when you put all of those people in control of everything just because they're freaks, well, you're not going to live very long with that prosperity. So I'm going to end it there.
Right.
Max von Schuller Kobayashi, thank you very much for troubleshooting our way through these events of the du jour. Any final comments for the listeners of the Japan Web podcast?
For Japan, we're going to be okay. It's going to take work. A lot of people are going to get out of work. A lot of people are going to be in financial troubles. But Japan will weather this and come through. So have faith. And let's work together and make community. Community is maybe the most important word we're going to have for Japan. If you're in America, oh boy. Get out of the big cities. Get into a more rural area. Fast.
Don't make friends just with the gun nuts. Remember, you need ammo and you need food if you're going to go that route.
Yes.
And if you don't go that route and you stay in the cities, like I'm staying in Tokyo here, we all take our chances.
Well, Japanese cities are a lot better than American cities.
They're kind of tailor-made for caring for people, so
there's
that as well.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, everybody.
All right. You found it. The Japan Web Podcast, episode 143, Troubleshooting Madness, is the title of today's show, with Max von Schuller Kobayashi. Go to MatthewPMBigelow.com for all your Japan Web needs. Until next time, everybody, I bid thee a heartful and warmful ja. Mata ne.